The Buddha said several times that all he taught was stress and the end of stress, or suffering and the end of suffering, however you want to translate dukkha. His very first sermon started with the topic of stress and suffering. His last teaching was on the path to the end of suffering. He really meant what he said. The issue of what causes suffering and how you can put it into it, that was the central question, the central issue of his teaching. And so many of us don't believe him. We want to use the teaching to answer other questions. What is the true nature of the world? What is the nature of myself? Those are the questions that the Buddha would have you put aside, because those are not the problem, aside from the fact that you get entangled in them and you create a problem for yourself by getting entangled in them. But answering those questions is not going to solve the problem. You want to dig further back and see, well, what is it that makes you want to answer these questions? Now, it doesn't take too much to trace it back to the issue of suffering and stress again. And so we have to keep these issues of suffering and stress and the cause of suffering and stress in mind all the time while we practice. Because the cause is something we're doing. So the big question is not, who am I or where am I? It's, what am I doing? With the emphasis on the doing. Because even before the Buddha taught about the Four Noble Truths, he taught that these truths are part of an eightfold path. It's a path of action to help you understand action. You're going to know something about yourself as you see yourself in action. But the big issue is just that. What are you doing that's causing stress? And how can you stop? This is one of the very first instructions the Buddha gave to Rahula. Were to look at his actions as he would look into a mirror. You look in a mirror to clean your face, and you look into your actions in this way to clean your actions by looking at what you're doing, what your intention is, what the actual results of your actions are. If you see that your intention is to cause harm, or the action you're planning to do is going to cause harm, you don't do it. If while you're doing something, you watch and see that you actually are causing harm, you stop. If you realize that an action you've done has caused harm, and we're talking about actions in thought, word, and deed, then you resolve not to repeat the mistake. If something you did or said, you go talk it over with somebody else who's further on the path. The whole point of this is to look at your actions and take that as your main focus. I've talked to some people who find these instructions tedious. It's like Lucy in that old Peanuts cartoon where she says, if you go around watching everything you say, you never get much said. But that's the whole point. What you're doing, what you're saying, what you're thinking, that's your contribution to the world. That's your contribution to the ongoing process of your life. And you want to make sure it's a good contribution. And you can learn from your actions. It's not that each moment is so fresh and unprecedented that you can't learn from the past. You learn from your mistakes, and you learn not to repeat them. You learn from the times you did something right. And see that as part of your progress on the path. The same principle applies to your meditation. You're trying to bring the mind to concentration. It is an activity. It's something you're doing. You get the mind in concentration. You try to maintain that. That, too, is an activity. You want to get good at it so you can watch it. It's like someone who's really good at a physical skill. a sport, a musical instrument, carpentry, dancing, being an acrobat. The Buddha would often use skills as analogies for his teachings to help explain what he was trying to get you to do with your mind. But in all cases, it's getting the mind to be skillful in its inner actions so you can see clearly what happens as a result of what you're doing. When your focus is skillful, when it's not skillful. There's a sutta where he talks about all the various mistakes you can make, and he made them. He noticed, okay, why is it that my mind is not settling down? Why is it not bright and clear? What's the problem? And he would notice either he was putting too much effort in or too little effort in, or he was clamping down too tightly, or he was letting things go too loosely. That's where he has the image of the quail. If you hold it too tightly, it's going to die. If you let it go, if you're too loose, it's going to fly away. It goes down all the different things that can get in the way of your concentration. There's sloth and torpor, there's doubt, there's inattention. And so he noticed that he was doing X and that was the problem, so that's he would stop doing X. This is how he trained himself. It wasn't like he had a map or he had the teachings all laid out before him. It was trial and error. And always the question was, something's wrong here. What am I doing wrong? What can I do to correct for that? So the emphasis is always on the actions, even when things were going well. The question is, what am I doing? He talks about going from one level of concentration to another. You settle into it first. And he says you indulge in that level of concentration. In other words, you learn how to enjoy it. Because one of the purposes of concentration is to give you nourishment on the path. Get a sense of pleasure, a sense of rapture or refreshment. These things are the lubricant that keeps the path going smoothly. If you lack the lubricant, things dry up pretty quickly. And like an engine without a lubricant, it begins to seize up. But then when you're really settled in that state of concentration, then you look at it and ask yourself, where is there still a disturbance here? Notice the question isn't, who am I? Or what does this tell me about the world? He's saying, what am I doing? What's the disturbance? What am I doing that's disturbing my own concentration? And as he points out again and again, it's usually the perception that's holding you there. There are different levels of subtlety in your perception of the breath. There's the in and out breath, that's one level of subtlety. Then there's the sense of the breath as an energy suffusing your whole nervous system, flowing with the in-breath, flowing with the out-breath. Then there's the perception of a really still and solid energy, which also counts as breath, even though it doesn't move. That underlies all this. You have to perceive this, hold that perception in mind. That takes you to more and more subtle levels of concentration. Similarly with the formless levels of concentration, you find that one perception, when you put it aside, is replaced by another one that's more refined, that's less disturbing to the mind. So you're not dealing with blatant stress and suffering, but there's a little level of disturbance in the concentration that's caused by what you're doing. So that's what the question always is when you settle in, okay, what can I do to gain benefit from this concentration? And what can I learn about what's still disturbing the mind in this concentration? And you're always looking at your actions, actions, actions. Because your actions are causing stress, even though it's a subtle level of stress at this point. So when you keep that point in mind, where is the stress? What am I doing causing the stress? You're right in line with what the Buddha said, what his teachings were all about. Stress, and how to put an end to it. Because when you see that you're doing something that's causing stress, you also want to see how it's unnecessary. That enables you to stop. That's what it means to let go. You stop doing things that are causing stress. And you try not to get entangled in issues of who am I or what is the world. You begin to see your sense of self as a kind of activity, another thing that's causing a disturbance to the mind. There was a German philosopher who talked about how the whole purpose of philosophy was to learn how to define yourself, and then you began to realize that defining yourself was the activity that defined you. Well, he stopped there. He didn't take it further. He thought that was a great insight. It was a good insight, but as far as it went, but it could go further. The question is, well, what's accomplished by this act of self-definition? And you find that it's causing a lot of stress and suffering. So you learn how to put that question aside. So as you come to the practice, remember, always try to bring the right questions. And as for your other questions, you can leave them at the door for the time being. Answer this one question, okay, why is there stress? And what can you do to put an end to it? And then if you find that after you're done with that question, you still have other questions, that you're free to pursue them as you like. But as a John Sawat once said, that once you've found the ultimate happiness, it comes when you've totally unraveled this issue of suffering and stress. The experience is so total, you're not really worried about who's experiencing it. It's that sufficient in and of itself. As the Buddha said, people who've gained awakening, they don't ask these questions anymore. And they don't try to answer them. The questions of who am I, what's the nature of the world, or whatever. Because they've learned to see through them as activities that cause stress. Things they don't have to get engaged in anymore. So take the Buddha at his word. That's all he taught. Stress and the end of stress, or suffering and the end of suffering. And you'll benefit from it.